you move your hips like the cool way you look at me. Everything about you is bringing me misery. Little red wagon, little red bike. I ain't no monkey, but I know what I like. I like the way you love me strong and slow. I'm taking you with me, honey, baby, when I go. Life is a bust. All you can do is do what you must. You do what you must do, and you do it well. I do it for you, honey, baby, can you tell?
Pours the rain, shadow dancing across your ears. shadow, little angel, you move beneath the moon and stars. I think of you in the morning light, waking to your sunlit smile. I think of you when you go away, away, even for a little while. I think of you when it starts to rain. Think of you when it starts to rain.
How high's the water, mama? 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 2 feet high and rising. But we can make it to the road in a homemade boat, cause that's the only thing we got left to float. It's already over all the wheat and oats. 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 3 feet high and rising. Well, the hives are gone, I lost my bees. Chickens are sleeping in the willow trees. Cows in water up past her knees. 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 4 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 4 feet high and rising. Hey, come look through the window pane. The bus is coming, gonna take us to the train. Looks like we'll be blessed with a little more rain. 4 feet high and rising. How high's the water, mama? 5 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 5 feet high and rising. Well, the rails are washed out north of town. We gotta head for higher ground. We can't come back till the water goes down. 5 feet high and rising. Well, it's 5 feet high and rising.
In 1887, a catastrophic flood on the Yellow River killed an estimated 900,000 people. It was called the worst flood in human history. But nearly half a century later, in August of 1931, another flood that was even more devastating swamped the Yellow River. This time the loss of life was so enormous as to be almost incomprehensible. Some sources reported that 3.7 million people died as a result of the 1931 flood, a number roughly equal to the present population of, say, Los Angeles. In 1938, another flood and famine battered the region yet again. The Yellow River is an unusual situation, an unusual case. It's a giant floodplain. There are no rivers, there are no gorges and valleys and canyons to contain it. It's more like spilling water onto a flat table, so that when it floods all the surrounding land. I'm Wes Modes, and I've been taking you on a night ride. This is volume 26. Tonight, the subject has been Rising Water.
I was walking on the water when I saw a crocodile. He had daisies in his hat, so I stopped him for a while. He delivered me a message, a massage to see. What it was more than flutter, dosage more than daisy age. Conversation through a rule, which the crowd will roar by millions. With the crocodile, said Dub, you must look for now the villains. Try to hold you underwater. But one thing we all must heed, Sony Walkman keep us walking. Till our soul can help you breathe when you tread water. Water. I walked along my journey, I thought, what have I just learned? In a flash, I saw commotion, there was movement in these ferns. Silently, the silence came. Was it the end of my world?
I shouted out in fear, who's there? It's me, said Mr. Squirrel. I've searched for you all over. Now you're found, no time to waste. We must find the preacher man. We must find the PA mate. For my population's dying, and we're all in tune to doom. Like your daisy, I need water, I need chestnuts to consume. Mr. Squirrel, I said, I'm sorry, but the problem can't be solved if there's no one here to help and no one to get involved. Always look to the positive and never drop your head, for the water will engulf us if you do not dare to tread. So let's tread water.
Tread water.
Now one weary day I woke, my alarm said plug time's up. Filled my bath up with the water, goggled with my goggle cup. As I bathed, I felt a presence, and I'm sort of ticklish. I looked down and then around, and I heard, hi, I'm Mr. Fish. How do you do? As for me, I'm in tip-top shape today, cause my water's clean and no one's mean says fresh fish fillet. See, I look past all my worries, which is something you must do. Throw your fed up, throw your head up, with this advice from me to you, and that's to tread water. As the day went unexplained, time was finding nothing fun. As I walked along the sidewalk, I heard, excuse me, plug one, plug from my soul, they lie, that is. I hollered, yes, are you talking to me? No alarm, and he said, let me introduce myself. I'm Mr. Monkey. Mr. Monkey, I pledge you slap a five. Now, how does your problem meet? He said, my bananas are at their ripest, but they all stand at 3 feet. My swinging hand is bandaged up. Could you help me with this chore? I brought him down to the native shop and brought him copies of the De La Score, which assisted well in his elevation. Now all bananas was at his grasp. He decided with this accomplished, he would put me onto the path. He told me to live by the inner sound, y'all, which would bring me health and showbiz. Then to use them, not abuse them, and remember the word that got me to him, and that is the tread water.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, also freakradio.org. Coming up next, it's the January 22nd, 2015 show of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. With me, I'm alone in the studio. My name is Robert Norris, except if you join me by phone. Phone lines will be open, 831-427-3772. 831-427-372, and also 831-469-3119. Stay tuned for numerous updates. Check in with Sacramento, which is taking its sleeping ban to Court of Appeals. Our own Steve Plaich and Attorney Judy Berry, who have reportedly filed with the state courts to overturn the stay-away law passed by City Council last Tuesday. Actually, a week ago Tuesday. And there's more, but you'll have to wait to find out.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, for you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Press your observation in. something else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, for I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle.
Not just a song, but maybe a little chitter-chatter, too, with social significance. Well, welcome to Bathrob Spears Broadsides. As mentioned before, I'm Robert, and the call-in number here again, in case you have some updates, in case you have some breaking news, in case you have some thoughts on what you're hearing, is 831-427-3772. And, well, I'm going to try to get through more than I got through in 3.5 hours on Sunday, which was mostly concerned with the last city council meeting. We have another one coming up on Tuesday. Oh, boy. And there's going to be protests around the Bearcat again, I believe, at 5 o'clock oral communications, starting at 4:30. Sounds like we have some callers calling in. Let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert. This is Mike Boyd calling you.
Hey, Mike. Well, welcome to the show. And I know you were able to get into the oral communications line last Tuesday at the last city council meeting, just barely, with all those Bearcat battlers in front of you and around you and the mics going
on. Oh, yeah, that was interesting.
And you pointed out that you're a disabled guy, and that disabled people are sort of being, you know, not really being given the primary facilities they need at that oral communications line. You did get to talk.
Yeah, well, I just told them they couldn't make people with disabilities stand in that line. That's all. That's an ADA violation. So.
Yeah. Well, I know I was sitting in one of the disabled seats or near to one. I got up to offer it. Nobody came over. They have the special press area that only one guy usually sits in. That's J.M. Brown, created by the same guy who created the decorum rules way back in 2000 that I have to constantly contend with, you know, trying to audio record what...
You mean the reporter created the rules?
No. He's the only person who's usually in that area. I guess occasionally there's a couple of other people, but media don't use that area. It's a press area. It's the second row, half of the second row is reserved for the press, and actually continued to be reserved for the press, even though the room was full and there was only one press person, the Sentinel reporter, J.M. Brown. But, it was created by Tim Fitzmaurice when he was mayor way back in 2001 in order to deal with homeless activists who he didn't like. They're sort of legal but theatrical stuff that attempted to bring the attention of the community to the hypocrisy and failures of the city council around poor people who are getting, you know, ticketed outside and harassed for being poor.
They're into stigmatizing them, that's for sure. They don't want them in this neighborhood.
Right, and it was particularly egregious then because, you know, he was elected on a platform to end the sleeping ban, Tim Fitzmaurice, and he also...
Oh, geez.
He was the only Green Party mayor.
He was the Obama of his time.
He was worse. I mean, he was actually the guy who claimed to be the left because he was of the Green Party. And the Green Party had passed a platform that said, you know, end sleeping bans statewide and in cities. And he did exactly the opposite. He continued to enforce them. And when activists came to express concerns at city council, he created new rules. Which
I never figured out why people are afraid of the homeless. I for the life of me don't understand what they're afraid of.
strangers in the area? I mean, some people say it's displaced fear, you know, because you're afraid of losing your home, because you're afraid of losing your job, because you're afraid, you know, of, you know, losing your, you know, your relatives in the war, because you're afraid of different kinds of crime, pumped up by, you know, TV and media. But on the other hand, it's...
Yeah, but, you know, I was brought up Christian, you know, that, you know, the poor people are who were supposed to be here for, right? The blessed are the poor in spirit, you know, blessed are the meek, that kind of stuff. That's what I learned when I was growing up. People that, and what was it, I think Jesus said something about a rich person has about as much chance of getting in heaven as a camel going through the eye of a needle, that kind of thing.
You know, that's a
you know, that kind of says where they're coming from. They're not good Christians, let's put it that way. They're worshiping a different God than you and I. More like the golden calf, to be exact.
Well, it's capitalism, son. What can I tell you? You know, that's
well. You know, they had that in the Bible too. You know, remember Moses killed 3,000 of his own for worshiping that golden calf.
Well, there are
I don't know if you remember
saying,
a number of years back when I was suing the county over redevelopment. That's basically what I told them. I went to the city and the county meetings and read them the Bible from Moses, story of Moses and stuff. And said,
I bet they loved that.
Signing all these bonds with these investment bankers. 13% interest. What's up with that? You know, that kind of shows where they're coming from. They're looking out for the interest of owners.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting that there's supposed to be a very large Christian population in the U.S. I mean, there's a whole book that describes a sort of nightmare future where Sarah Palin won the election and a theocratic state is created. But it's based upon the theory now of that there really are not just strong right-wing Christian groups, but a very large percentage of the country believes in, you know, a monotheistic deity and is also into the Bible one way or another.
Well, that's our religion already, dude.
Speak for yourself, man.
No, I'm just saying, it's not God, it's the almighty dollar they worship.
Well,
okay?
Take
any coin or any dollar bill or any money you have in your pocket and look on it, all says in God we trust. It doesn't say anything about trusting in money.
Well, you know, you need money to buy food unless you grow your own.
Well, why? It doesn't have any value.
Food has value.
You don't have faith in the stuff.
Hey, man, you can't get no groceries. You ain't got no cash. What can you do?
we used to trade.
And that's another myth. I don't think people actually did that much trading. I think there was a whole different system. But let me ask what you called in about, because I know that we spoke on the phone, you know, in the past about you actually served the entire city council with a lawsuit recently.
Yeah. So what's going on is before the November election on July 15th, we'll start off on the June 10th, the Board of Supervisors passed a resolution to put a tax on what they call a cannabis business on the ballot in November, and when they did that, I basically went down there and told them if they did that, I was going to sue them because I was a patient and that was my medicine, and under state law, you can't tax medicine. And they, of course, didn't want to hear that. They said it was okay for them to tax and gave me a bunch of reasons why. But I basically pointed out to them that on May 30th, the Republican House of Representatives passed House Resolution 6440, which basically took medical marijuana off enforcement schedule. It was no longer considered illegal under federal law as marijuana because the word medical was in front of that word marijuana. And so I took that and said, hey, look, it's good enough for the Republicans. It's
it's certainly consistent with our state law.
Let me ask you something, Mike, here, interrupt you for a moment. Did the bill actually pass way back there in May, or did it take longer to get to
it? Yeah, on May 30th, it passed the House of Representatives.
Right, no, but did it get signed by the...
It wasn't a law yet.
Sorry, okay. Say that again?
It was not a law. It was just a House resolution that passed the House of Representatives. Well, it didn't go to the Senate yet. It didn't get signed by the president.
And it ultimately did get signed or not?
So what happened is the Congressman Farr and Democrat Congressman Farr and Republican Congressman I can't remember the Republican guy. He's another California. He's a Republican congressman. They put an amendment into this thing called the Omnibus Budget Act of 2015, which they threw in all kinds of crap into that. But one of the things they put an amendment in was to add that H.R. 4660 language into the budget act that was going to be approved by the Senate and the House of Representatives, which is called H.R. 83, Section 838 now, and then that passed the Senate, and then the President signed it into law on December 16th of last year. So now that's federal law. It's not just a House resolution. So at that point, I said, okay, well, it's time to go after these other guys because, basically in the county's response, they were saying that, oh, well, it's not the law. If you look at their argument on the ballot, that's what they said in their answer. It wasn't the law. Well, now it is. And so what I did is I researched it, and I found out that the city had put the same measure on the ballot in the city. And so I went after, that's why I went after and named all the city council members, because they put the same thing. And basically I'm alleging they're involved in a civil conspiracy together to violate my civil rights under Colorado state law.
And what's the success of those kinds of lawsuits? Do you have any sense of that, or are you just,
what's the success rate?
Yeah.
Well, basically, it depends on the facts and the evidence, I would think, more than anything else. I mean, if you've got the right facts, obviously, you can win. If you have the supporting facts. And in this case, the facts are all pretty much public. I mean, I got the resolution the city council passed, and in the city staff report of the city administrator, basically he's talking about this letter he got from the county asking them to put it on the ballot. So, and then the other people that I'm naming are the people that signed the ballot argument in favor of the tax, what I'm specifically doing is targeting those folks that are collecting a pension from the government. And we have the assistant police chief Martinez. I named him because he put his name on the ballot and on the argument. And then there's this fire guy for the city that I named. And then there's this Cal Fire dude in the county, Halbert or something like that, I named. Fred Keeley put his name on there, but he didn't list it as himself as the treasurer, the county treasury. He listed his name, his title as the president of Semper Varian Fund. So I named him, and I named the Semper Varian Fund too. Okay. Now, the only other non-government entity besides the Semper Varian Fund I named is this guy, Colin Disharoon, who, from all the information I can find, is the owner of this Association for Standardized Cannabis, which is the group that put their attorney, Ben Rice, put their name on both ballot measures, okay, in the city and the county.
Let me understand this, Mike. Ben Rice, who sort of has a mixed reputation in radical circles, depends on who you talk to. But he's notably been the attorney for Valerie Corral and the defending, you know, high-profile medical marijuana folks.
He put
his name on a ballot measure that actually increases the cost of marijuana, taxes it, and makes it more difficult for medical marijuana people to buy it.
What? Say that again?
Well, I'm just wondering, he put his name on these two measures, which essentially creates a new bureaucracy and essentially funds law enforcement to run around and look at dispensaries and things of that sort, taxes.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that seems, I'm saying that's not, that's interesting. And indeed, you know, people who get in positions of power who have reputations as being big, you know, liberals tend suddenly to start acquiring a different color. I know that the Measure K Commission, which Theodora Carey and he helped initially to establish back in the about eight years ago, he actually did a deal with the city to essentially gut it and remove its oversight of the police department provisions. So, you know, it's interesting that you also bring up that he's supported.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I don't honestly know boo about any of these folks. I don't care. You know, like Fred Keeley, I hear he's like pretty famous dude and done a lot of stuff, but he's not too smart if he's putting his name on a ballot measure and arguing to discriminate against somebody like he's doing with me. Because basically that's what my case is about. It's about discrimination. It's about a poll tax on medical marijuana patients, essentially. It's no different from what they did in the South with black people when they were trying to vote. They're trying to stigmatize my compassionate use that Prop 215 was enacted for to protect. So they're violating my civil rights. And they think that's okay, but when you're in the government, okay, your speech isn't protected like it is when you're not in the government, like mine is, okay? And suing the government is one of the most time-honored forms of protected free speech in our country's history.
Well, let me ask you this, Mike.
That's petitioning for your grievance.
Mike, let me ask you this. This is really a tax on the dispensaries. How can you interpret it directly as something that attacks your civil rights?
Because I get the bill. I have a receipt that shows a tax on it when I get medicine at the dispensary. It's real simple.
So the tax is just passed directly on to you?
Yeah. And when I filed my suit, I attached the receipt that I gave the judge, and I said, here, show sales tax.
Well, I know. Let me ask you this. This is something I've been trying to get more information on and haven't yet been too successful except reading what's online. There is a series of restrictions on dispensaries coming up at, next Tuesday at the Board of Supervisors, 9:00 in the morning, that the Cannabis Advocates Alliance, whatever it's called, is...
Oh, yeah, they're another so-called front group for advocating for the patients, and they're not advocating for anything but the growers. They're not looking out for me. They're not looking out for people that are patients. They're just like the Association of Standardized Cannabis. Basically, the cops threaten the growers, and the growers try to respond by kissing their ass. And I told them, you don't kiss these guys' asses. You slap them with a lawsuit, and if they say ask you any questions, you say, I don't have to answer your questions. That's how it works, okay?
I have
a Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Do you have any other patients who've joined you in this lawsuit or who are supporting you?
Huh?
Any other patients supporting you or joining you in this lawsuit or, you know?
Oh, no, I tried, but, you know, most patients are afraid of the government. Most patients are afraid of the cops. I'm not afraid of the cops. I'm not afraid of the sheriff. When the sheriff screwed with me, the old sheriff, I took out recall papers on his ass.
Which sheriff was that?
Wilwack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't you remember that whole big deal about the smart meters? I'm my group, Californians for Renewable Energy, is the fiscal sponsor of StopSmartMeters.org. We were protesting in front of PG&E's installation sites for Wellington installers of smart meters, and the county sheriff, even though we had an ordinance passed by the county against the damn things, the county sheriff wouldn't enforce the county's own ordinance. So I took paper after he some lady almost died over in Boulder Creek or over in Felton when the cops wouldn't look for him, and remember the prisoner that got us escaped at the hospital and all that kind of stuff. I had a whole list of reasons to recall that guy, but that was the straw that broke the camel's back when he wouldn't even enforce the ordinance. So, you don't be afraid of these guys. Why do you think they're talking about making the sheriff appointed? It doesn't have anything to do with saving money. It's the county government doesn't want me to be able to recall the sheriff.
Well, how far did the recall go? I should have. I guess.
Oh, it went as far as it needed to. I got the sheriff showed up at a meeting over at the Freedom Forum and basically came in and talked to us and said, "Well," and I asked him. I said, "Okay, well, I'll give you a choice, Sheriff. Either you got a choice. We can do the recall, or we can do this in court. And if we do it in court, I'm going after the new sheriff's station." And he told me court. And so I did. That's why I filed my redevelopment lawsuit against the county, because they were giving all that money to the new sheriff's station.
And where is that lawsuit now? How's that going?
Well, the state went and got involved and changed the law, so it kind of made my lawsuit moot. Because, basically all the funding authority went to the state and there was nothing left up at the local level. So the judge basically didn't have any authority to do anything anymore. So I just dropped it and they gave me a couple of G's to go away.
So you're making bucks off your advocacy?
Well, I get go away checks every now and then, yeah.
Wow.
I got a nice one, about $100,000 from Enron. I'd like to show you sometime.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you can take me out to lunch.
Mm-hmm. That was many years ago when I had money, dude.
Oh, boy. Well, you see, you never call me soon enough.
I got over my delusions of grandeur, I can assure you.
So we're talking with Mike Boyd, who has recently filed lawsuits against the signers. Was it Measures L and K? Are those the two measures?
L and K and the city council and the... and the Board of Supervisors and their members individually.
Well,
I'm
suing
them for violating my civil rights.
What about at the last Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, the group I'm working with, I looked over this Cannabis Growers Alliance, which I was, I'm not terribly impressed with them, but I also don't like the county, sending in enforcement agents to these places either.
The thing that they're talking about, I looked at, and here's the deal. And I went to the Board of Supervisors. If you were there, you would have heard me tell them that they need to stop and that they need to table this because I'm suing them, because they're talking about Measure K as the impetus behind what they're doing with the growers. That's what they're taking the money to crack down on the growers and use the cops to crack down on the growers. And
let me interrupt you for a moment. Measure K, by that you mean the new Measure K, not the Measure K that established the lowest enforcement priority in the city, right?
One that I'm suing them about. The cannabis business tax.
Right, that's what I thought.
And Measure L in the city.
So what they're doing on Tuesday is they're coming back to the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors is coming back with a resolution, or their staff is, to essentially severely restrict growers? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, well, that's what it looks like they're doing. But what I'm in the process right now is now that I've served all these guys, four of them I had to have the sheriff serve, by the way.
Say that again?
Four of the defendants had to be served by the sheriff.
And why was that?
Well, because they were hiding out.
who were these defendants?
Former mayor, M-E-I-E-R, how do you say her last name?
You mean the mayor of Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
Well, there was Robinson, there was Byers, there was...
M-E-I-E-R, that's how you spell it.
M-E-I-E-R, well, I think they think of
Byers. The older lady that runs...
Byers, not Myers, Byers. Her name is B-E-I-E-R-S, Byers.
Okay,
correct your papers there, Mike.
Byers. Her, Fred Keeley, and Halberton, the Cal Fire dude, and Colin Disharoon. The AFC did.
Huh. Never heard of those guys, but interesting. So what about this? I mean, first of all, I guess in this thing coming up on Tuesday, you are in this case on the side of the Growers Alliance because you think these restrictions.
Well, I went to the Growers Alliance, right? Just so you know, December they had a meeting at Loudoun Center.
Right, but they
told me to leave.
Right, I hear you. I mean, I've tried to get them to come on the air without success, and they had a meeting last night, and hopefully I was going to get a report from someone who went there. I haven't heard back from her yet. Maybe she'll call in during the show. But the issue, though, is should members of the public be supportive of or oppose these new regulations that are coming up Tuesday at the Board of Supervisors? And you, I take it, say they should oppose them, right?
Oh, they should oppose anything. It's all illegal. They shouldn't be spending any money. They shouldn't be doing anything on this while I'm still in court. They're violating my civil rights by going forward with anything. They're supposed to stop. As soon as I sued them, they were supposed to stop. And they didn't. They just kept going, pretending like I don't matter. And that's what they're going to keep doing until somebody slaps them.
But independently of your lawsuit, the idea of these restrictions is not a good thing, is what I think is your position as well.
Right. Well, what they're trying to do is they're trying to regulate what you can grow and put environmental regulations on the growers, okay? But the thing is, they're taxing me, the patient, in order to for their law enforcement activity, which is totally illegal. And that's what, if you look at the resolutions that they're voting on, it's all based on the tax. If they didn't have the tax, they wouldn't be doing nothing, is my point.
I see. So,
if they're doing something, it's because they're ignoring the lawsuit. And that's basically what I'm going to go tell the judge on Monday when I file my amended complaint.
So what have you filed so far, and what's the next court date coming up?
Well, okay, I have to file I was going to try and do it tomorrow, but it's taking me longer than I thought. So I'm probably going to do it Monday. I have a hearing on my motion to amend the complaint to include the city and all those folks on February 27th, okay?
It's going to happen.
So that's the next big hearing.
What's going to happen at that hearing?
Well, the judge will decide whether or not they're going to allow me to amend the suit to include the other defendants that I've just added.
Defendants include the Santa Cruz City Council.
That's correct. And the city itself.
And this is what time and what court?
8:30 in courtroom 4.
Who is the judge who's going to be kicking your ass out of the court?
What's that? No. If I lose the amendment, I'm not out of the court. It just means I'm stuck with just suing the county.
I see. And if you're just suing the county, then how soon will this go to trial?
Oh, well, it has to go to trial within 12 months, so that's probably March, April.
Okay, so you mean you filed this some time ago?
Well, I filed it in July.
So they have a year to do it then.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, Mike. Is there anything that you want to any website you have, any place people can go to get more information about this? Let me just ask.
No, not really. But I would encourage people to go down to the meeting on Tuesday and speak against them imposing more draconian stuff on the growers. They're totally out of control. I don't know what those guys are thinking.
And is Valerie Corral going to be there militantly supporting you?
I've never met Valerie Corral. That's like talking to me about Ben Rice. I don't know. I've heard her name. I've read stuff in the newspaper. I don't know what her position is on what I'm doing or not. But if she really thinks that it's okay to tax patients, you know, I don't care how famous she is. I don't agree with that.
Have you seen her at any of the Board of Supervisors hearings on these issues where you've been there?
Nope.
So in essence, she is not, at least in a high-profile way, opposing these restrictions on growers.
No, and I think... I don't know. What was that other group you said, the growers group that... I can't remember what you call it.
It's called the Cannabis Advocates Alliance, I think, something to that
effect. Okay, the Cannabis Advocate Alliance. There was some guy there at the meeting I went, and he was saying, oh, well, I talked to Ms. Corral about this, and she's fully behind this letter to the Board of Supervisors. And I looked at the letter, and I said, I wouldn't sign this letter, I said, because you're basically admitting that their concerns are valid when they're not.
So the letter that I have it right here, I believe that's probably the same one you're talking about, is they want to request that the local patients be given a greater voice in redrafting the cannabis ordinance, that the draft clearly and more environmentally friendly paths to compliance for patient cultivators, and in redrafting existing ordinances, county preserve the minimal diversity of choice required for patients to have proper access to quality cannabis medicine. So looking to delay this for 90 days, that's what the growers want to do, so there can be a significant improved third-party compliance program, that cannabis patients get a minimum degree of access to and diversity of medicine, because allowing only 3 grow sites per dispensary, abolishing collective gardening rights, and making other forms
of... So why were they reducing anything?
I don't know.
And what gives them right?
I don't even have a copy of the actual ordinance that they are trying to pass, or the new rules they're trying to pass. I've been looking for it, and I apologize for not having that. I just have the arguments against it.
But here's the basic premise of my suit. They created this thing called a cannabis business. There is no such a thing under state or federal law. It doesn't exist. Okay? So, and they're taxing a cannabis business. Okay? Even though it doesn't exist under state law. And then the dispensaries, which under state law are called collectives, okay, or caregivers in my case, okay, they're the ones who I get my medicine from, okay, not cannabis businesses. There's no such thing, okay. Now, they created this conspiracy to tax this non-existent entity called a cannabis business, and they entered into a conspiracy with the city of Santa Cruz to create the same kind of fictitious entity, okay? And they plan on taxing all the dispensaries, which are, under state law, caregivers, okay, and nonprofit collectives, okay, which are exempt from tax, by the way. Nonprofits, I mean, okay? They're taxing them. That's what they did, okay? And that's not, you know...
So I guess what you're saying...
Have you ever heard of a cannabis business before?
I think what you're saying is that you don't feel the criticism of the Cannabis Growers Alliance goes deep enough, that you support, you know, what they're saying, in the sense that you don't want to see these regulations put into force, because they do restrict cannabis growers improperly. But it should be more deeply addressed in terms of there being any kind of taxing or regulation through this approach at all. At least no taxing and no funding of these enforcement agents. Is that my understanding?
Right, they don't have a statutory basis for what they're doing. So what they're doing is basically targeting me, the patient, as a class.
I got you. Okay. Let me ask if anybody wants to call in, has any questions for Mike Boyd, who's doing a lawsuit challenging the very taxing passed by Measures L and K, and which is also going to be furthered by these ordinances passed next Tuesday at the Board of Supervisors, 9 a.m., if you want to be there, fifth floor of the county building. 469-3119 is the number to call. 469-3119 if you have any questions for Mike or comments you want to make. And then we're going to roll on, because I'm over my time with you, Mike.
Okay. That's fine, Ryan.
So let's see. So you don't know, there's no place people can go to get more info, no blog you're doing, nothing like that?
Nah, I'm just so busy. I don't have time to do that kind of stuff.
Is anybody in other cities pursuing a similar approach to you that you know of?
Well, I don't know of any place else that... I know that they've passed a lot of taxes on medical marijuana in the state and other jurisdictions. Whether they call it a cannabis business or not, I don't know. But I don't know of any action or any tax that has, besides these two that I'm aware of, that were enacted in light of that action by the Congress, the House of Representatives, in May. You know, they shouldn't have. Once the feds changed the law and the definition to be include medical and marijuana, they should have stopped. They shouldn't have been doing anything.
The actual change in the law, Mike, how does that alter the, I mean, it seems to me that you shouldn't be taxing medicine anyway, but how did the previous law allow taxing and the change by the House, thank you, Farr, for doing that, change all that?
So what happens is State Board of Equalization is the one that collects the sales and use tax, okay? And the director of the State Board of Regulations, a bureaucrat, wrote a report, basically a letter, saying that they could tax medical marijuana as a tangible property, is what they call it. And they based it on the fact that it was illegal under state law, under federal law, excuse me. Because it was illegal under federal law, they could tax it like any other tangible property. Okay? So now once the feds defined it as medicine, that no longer applied.
I got
and then
you.
It became medicine
I got
under
you.
State law.
I understand. All right, well, that's good. I'm gonna roll you out of here.
Okay, nice talking to you, Robert.
Before you go, Mike, is there a way people can get in touch with you if they have questions? Do you want that to happen?
Sure. Hold on. Never mind. Somebody's car alarm. What's going on?
Okay.
So the best way to get a hold of me is to email me at my email address, which is MICHAELBOYD at sbcglobal.net.
So that's Michael Boyd, MICHAELBOYD at sbcglobal.net.
That's correct.
Thanks for calling in, Mike, and good luck on Tuesday and good luck in court.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you, man. Appreciate your doing this. And you are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. Let's take a musical break. And remember, you can call in with your thoughts, comments, updates, offers of a place where we can actually put our transmitter once we get bounced out of the current place, which is likely to happen within the next month or two. That's the prediction, although you never can tell. But still, that's what's going on. Give us a call at 427-3772 if you'd like, or 469-3119, which is just coming in. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
You know, you're so popular that people just can't get through on this line.
Well, I know that. I try to avoid it, but I it's just how it is with me. I believe this is also not quite as popular, but still popular, Stephen Plaich, rhymes with H.
Well, it's because of personality.
Well, you and me and Stalin, I guess the three of us, or Mike Rodkin is probably involved, too.
There you go.
So Steve, you are finally announcing, after endless work on the subject and grumbling by me, that you have filed an injunction, or are you about to file the injunction against the stay-away law that City Council passed Tuesday before last?
Well, what we did is we filed and served our complaint for declaratory relief, which is the underlying complaint on which we'll base our request for a preliminary injunction. The next step is to schedule a hearing on the preliminary injunction, and hopefully we'll get that heard before February 13th, which is when the 13-100 would go into effect.
Steve, hang on just for a second. For the first time ever, we have another call coming in. Maybe someone is about to challenge your information. Let's get him on the line just briefly.
Okay.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Steve and Robert, and turn down your radio, please. Turn it down. Okie dokie, good. So caller, are you calling about something Steve is talking about? Turn down that radio. Turn it down. Turn it off. Kill it. Throw it out.
We'll show you. You must tell people to call 469-3119 first.
First? What do you mean? Well, that's probably good advice. It's a technical thing. But anything you have for Steve before I move on and get back to him? Okay. Steve, you're still there?
Yeah, so anyway, that's procedurally what we need to do. And then next week we'll get back into court and schedule a hearing on the preliminary injunction itself. But as I said, one of the main reasons for doing this is to get a hearing on an injunction before this ordinance goes into effect. As you know, they have the second reading on January 13th, so 30 days thereafter would be February 12th or 13th, give or take.
Steve, we're having trouble hearing you. You're muffled for some reason. This sometimes happens when you call in. I think it's the cell phone you're on or the location you're at. I'm not sure how to deal with it. Maybe talk more slowly, perhaps?
Can you hear me if I do this?
Yes, hello?
That's a little better?
I think that's a little better, yeah. Go ahead. So you're saying you're going into court this week and we'll be trying to get a preliminary injunction, and if not, you'll be going to in for something a little bit later in the game?
No, procedurally, can you hear me now?
Somewhat better, yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's just one right this way. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. I think I can.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, procedurally, Robert, what we needed to do was file and serve the complaint. Having done that, now next week we can go in and we can get a date on which the preliminary injunction hearing would be heard. And that's the important part, because we need to have that heard and get a court decision before February 12th, which is when this 1308-100 goes into effect.
And for those who don't know, Steve, can you... I've done it many times, but maybe you can clarify in a few words what this stay-away order law is that you're trying to stop.
Well, it's an attempt by the city, really, to chase people and, subsequently homeless folks out of our public spaces, our parks and beaches. Initially, it's a community response to what they consider to be unacceptable social behavior in the parks, acting out or drunk in public or chasing the citizens out of the park. But as it really plays out, and your good friend and ours, Raven Davis, has done a lot of statistical work around this, and I'm sure that you've talked to her about this on your show, the tickets that are being given have really nothing to do with behavior or nuisance. They have everything to do with camping, park access, smoking, things like that. So, this is not the kind of policy that the city should be pursuing. If they perceive there is some activity in the park that they would like to address, they can do it in other ways. It's rather than banning for up to a year people from using the parks and open spaces at all. It's outrageous.
I know that there's currently a procedure for doing stay-away orders for people from businesses that they've shoplifted from and been convicted of or pled guilty to, and for staying away from individuals that they've had violent interactions with or there's been some problem with. And there's even been stay-away orders, civil suits, to try to get people, two individuals particularly, about 5 years ago, who were sleeping a lot downtown, Lito and his companion. That was done by a court. This is can be done, as I understand it, by just a ranger or a police officer without any particular standards other than the fact that she or he is giving an infraction ticket for smoking or sleeping or being...
It does not have to be any kind of behavioral-related statute at all. It can be any public ordinance. And that's the problem. It's way too broad, way too general, and it gives the police and the park rangers enormous power to decide who they want in the park and how long they want to exclude them from any of the parks in open space.
And you've been working on this, you say it's a 60-page document you filed?
Well, no, the complaint is only about 12, and then the ex parte application for preliminary injunction is about 25, so then there's other, papers that go along with it. I sent to you, in your email, in fact, a copy of the complaint. You'll be able to download that. It should be in your email now. And also sent along the ACLU statement that we sent to City Council initially when there was absolutely no recourse for people who received stay-away orders to challenge them before any kind of city official.
And in response, as I understand it, they pulled back a little bit, the city staff and the city council, and set up an administrative process by which if you within 10 days, you can prove by a preponderance of the evidence to a designee by the city manager,
right,
that you are not guilty of the infraction,
yeah,
that you are being ticketed with, then the stay-away order will be lifted. But
yeah.
Well, what's your reaction to that?
The key to that is that they made it an expedited process, so if somebody wants to challenge the stay order or the infraction on which it's based immediately, they can do so within about 3 business days. So as far as the ACLU and civil liberties challenging the notice and opportunity to be heard elements of the stay order, they have remedied that at least to a degree. But still, it doesn't really it doesn't do anything to protect people from really being booted out of the parks and open spaces, which were traditional from before. You talked about, you mentioned earlier about businesses having stay orders. Those are stay orders on private property that retailers have, you know, some control over because there's a property right, at issue. These are public spaces. They're public spaces that are, you know, that belong to you and I and everybody who's a citizen or a resident or anybody who's in Santa Cruz County.
We have a caller. Let's see if he has a question for you. Hey there, caller. You're on the line with Steve Plaich on the phone, and I'm in the studio. Go ahead. Hello?
I'm here.
I'm sorry. There you are.
David Silva?
Yes, David.
Yes, I've been involved in electoral politics since 1960, and I've been HIV positive since 1974, and very early found that the use of medical marijuana was helpful to me. I was one of the founders of the Peace and Freedom Party, and I was the chair of the Green Party when we put forward Tim Fitzmaurice. I must say, of all the political mistakes I've made in my life, that was the biggest political mistake I ever made.
I got you, David. Of course, right now we have Steve Plaich on the line, and we're talking about the stay-away orders. But, I appreciate your calling in about that.
I really appreciate your early caller. He had a lot of good information, and there was a few things I wanted to talk about that he didn't mention, but I can call back later.
Yeah, please do. Please call back in a few minutes, and we'll talk some more.
Okie dokie.
Thank you, man. So you still there, Steve? And I think we lost Steve. Steve will hopefully be calling back. Maybe he's calling back on the other line. Hi, you're on Free Radio. No, nobody's there. A little bit cranky on the phones today. Reminding listeners who are listening that we are at 101.3 FM and freakradio.org, and the show usually broadcasts later. You can archive it, as say we archive it. You can listen to the archive at HuffSantaCruz.org. That's the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website. You go there and you can hear us. Just click on the name of the show, which is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, and there will be. So I'm going to play a little music, and hopefully that we can get some of our phone guests, Steve Plaich specifically, back to us. It was my bad. I cut him off here by pushing one of the wrong buttons, which happens occasionally. That's probably him again. Let's hope we can hear him this time. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
You must have lost me when David rang off.
Well, actually, I was feeling very jealous of your well-spoken, articulate qualities, and I just had to cut you off myself.
So anyway, maybe we can talk more about it at greater length on Sunday. Perhaps we will have some other strategy to discuss at that time. But right now, you know, the Homeless Person Legal Assistance Project, as you know, has been offering free legal services to the homeless community for a couple of years. And now we have an opportunity, to be their voice in court. Certainly, they don't have much of a voice before our city council. And heretofore, they've had no voice in our courts. So we're going to give them a voice on this. It's time to push back.
I agree, and I wonder, have you been following at all Mike Boyd's lawsuit around the medical marijuana tax? Have you been following that at all?
You know, I know Mike from his previous lawsuits. I'm familiar with his work, but I haven't really been following the cannabis litigations at all.
Uh-huh, and I know that you did say at one point you were interested in the upcoming Board of Supervisors nonsense, I should say, their attempt to restrict cannabis growing coming up on Tuesday, but you hadn't yet been able to get to their meetings or delve more deeply into it. Have you had any more information or thoughts on that?
I don't. You know, I would like to support them in any way that I can. It's really a time concern for me, but if I can get to a meeting and if I can either vocally or, you know, by showing up in support, help them out, I will do that.
Now, I also understand that there is an anti-Bearcat protest coming up on Tuesday at the City Council again for the third City Council running, and you are part of a group called Smash or Snatch or...
Scram. Santa Cruz Resistance Against Militarization. Our good friend Dennis Settler came up with that. You know, we have a group of people that's growing all the time, and we're going to continue to have a presence at City Council and try to get a forum sponsored by the ACLU around this issue and keep talking about it because it's an important issue and it certainly is not going away.
So I notice that Scram has not yet invited Huff to its closed-door meetings. Is there some significance in this, Steve Blitch?
Well, no, it's just that we have a small planning group, and when we have, on Tuesday, you'll see us at City Council. You can ask about the meetings, and I'm sure that there's no reason why all interested people in Santa Cruz can't be a part.
And I understand there's also a Cages Kill rally coming up on Saturday at noon. Any comments on that?
Well, I'm going to be there with the ACLU, also with SCORE. I had an opportunity to send a personal message of support to Symbaros, with whom I'm in solidarity and have done some work with. I will certainly be there at noon and give them all support that I can.
Will you be, should we say, demanding the doors of the jail be open until there is adequate medical treatment there, perhaps?
Well, that's something that will probably be discussed, no doubt.
Indeed. And finally, I guess they're following this current lawsuit, which, again, the date it goes immediately to court is when, this lawsuit against the stay-away orders?
Well, we're going to be going back into court next week, but that'll just be to determine what date the hearing for preliminary injunction will be scheduled for. So, our plan is to have a full hearing on a preliminary injunction in court before the day that the ordinance goes into effect, which is February 12th, give or take. So that's the timeline. And we're going to pursue that vigorously.
Now, I was actually made the subject of, I and others, of a lawsuit by Mike Rotkin and other members of the city to stop a protest that happened some years ago at City Hall. And there was an attempt to get a restraining order to be followed by a preliminary injunction, followed by a permanent injunction. I think actually that was even further back against food servers.
Well,
you're not trying to get a restraining order initially against the...
No, as a matter of law, there really isn't anything to restrain right now because the law isn't in effect.
I see. I got you. So,
you can't ask for a remedy that, you don't really have a problem with. So, no. There's no reason for us to get a temporary restraining order. The preliminary injunction itself, if granted, would hold in abeyance the law until we go through a full court process on our complaint, which would take many months.
And what does the preliminary injunction involve? I mean, have you got time to talk about this now or not?
Well, it would enjoin enforcement of the ordinance of 1308-100, which means that that ordinance would essentially be off the books until the court decided whether or not it was constitutional. So it couldn't be enforced at all.
So, I mean, how long, I mean, does this, as a lengthy hearing, do you anticipate Danette Shoemaker and 43 Take Back Santa Cruz people to come and bring their children, weeping children, into court, or what do you expect?
Well, a lot of this is done on the papers. But there is some opportunity for witnesses and argumentation, so we'll take full advantage of that. Certainly, we will want to have people there speaking to the fact that most of the ordinances that stay-away orders are being based upon are not the kind of behavioral and nuisance-related offenses that the ordinance was intended to address. So those are things that the court needs to know, and we'll bring those before the court in any way that we think is appropriate.
We can talk about this further and some other issues on Sunday if you're still around. Anything else happening in the next 3 or 4 days we need to know about? We've kind of covered a lot of it already.
All right, sounds good. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. All right, then. Thank you.
Bye.
And for the caller who is just trying to call in, try again and you'll get on. I think the point was well made by the other brief caller who pointed out we have some phone line problems. You can get on one line, but then you can't get on the other. If you want somebody else to join you, you have to start on a certain line. I think that's the point that was made. While I'm waiting for that phone call, perhaps, from you, whoever you are, I'll give you a little music to tap your feet by.
Ain't got no home, ain't got no shoes, ain't got no money, ain't got no class, ain't got no skirts, ain't got no sweater, ain't got no perfume, ain't got no bed, ain't got no mind, ain't got no mother, ain't got no culture, ain't got no friends, ain't got no schooling. Ain't got no love, ain't got no name, ain't got no ticket, ain't got no token, ain't got no God. And what about God? Why am I alive anyway? Yeah, what about God? Nobody can take away. Got my hair, got my head, got my brains, got my ears, got my eyes, got my nose, got my mouth, I got my smile. I got my tongue, got my chin, got my neck, got my boots, got my heart, got my soul, got my back, I got my sex. I got my arms, got my hands, got my fingers, got my legs, got my feet, got my toes, got my liver, got my blood, I've got life. I got my freedom, I've got life. I've got life, and I'm gonna keep it. I've got life, and nobody's gonna take it away.
We all got life. Some of us got it better than others. On the line with me is David Silva, former city council candidate, activist who fought vigorously for the sleeping ban in the 90s, and a faithful listener to Free Radio Santa Cruz's best show, Bathrop's Piers Broadsides.
Hey, Uncle Robert. I love Free Radio. You know I do.
Yeah.
I've been involved in. I'm going to be reading from my notes because I'm really shaky tonight, so I'm going to read from my notes. So people bear with me if I sound stodgy and I have a hard time reading my own writing. But anyway, I've been involved in political electoral politics since 1960, and I've been HIV positive since 1964 and using marijuana. And I knew early on, before most people, that, you know, what the benefits were. And I was one of the people that put the Peace and Freedom Party on the ballot, and I was chairman of the Green Party when we put Tim Fitzmaurice forward. And I must say, that was the biggest political mistake I think I've ever made in my whole political career. Here I go with my notes, huh? I had a little note here. You know, if Santa Cruz is want to save the soul of Santa Cruz, you know, they have to repeal this sleeping ban. It's just not humane. It's just insane that so many cities have this, and that a supposedly progressive town has. I'm no liberal. I was in the 60s. My house was where the Black Panther stayed when they came to town. You know, I'm no liberal. I'm a pretty radical progressive. But as a veteran, I have to say that Obama kind of surprised me. I would say that the Veterans Administration has operated better under President Obama than any other president so far, and I wanted to throw that in. We need to repeal the sleeping ban, people. Come on, everybody. We got to get up our duffs and get it done. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, David. And, yeah, actually, mentioning the sleeping ban, as I say, now that we're talking about the sleeping ban, I got a copy of Homeward, which is the Sacramento homeless newspaper,
in the mail the other day, and it's sold by homeless people in Sacramento just the way the Street Spirit and Street Sheet is sold by homeless folks in the Bay Area to, you know, make enough money to get a cup of coffee, get off the street, and also pass on news of what's going on and have a sort of a humane and somewhat minimally dignified contact with people. Apparently, you know, they can't respect someone sitting next to a building, but they can respect someone who's, you know, hawking a newspaper. So it's, that's what that's about. But in any case, in Sacramento, there is a lawsuit that is being pursued, similar perhaps, well, we don't have a lawsuit against the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz at the moment. We do have this new strategy of taking those who are giving people sleeping ban tickets to small claims court, which I've talked about a bit in past shows, and will soon be bringing to the claims office of the city of Santa Cruz, maybe even tomorrow. I have to look over the documents to see if they're all ready to go. But in Sacramento, there is a lawsuit. And here's a story from the Sacramento Bee. More than 5 years after setting up tents on a private lot in downtown Sacramento to challenge the city's prohibition on camping, homeless people finally got their day in court Tuesday. And that was 2 days ago. The case before the 3rd District Court of Appeals in Sacramento stems from a September 2009 protest. Whoa, it takes a long time in these state courts. In which dozens of homeless people created an impromptu tent city on a vacant lot near 12th and C Streets with the permission of the property owner. For about 3 weeks, police raided the encampment, seizing tents, sleeping bags, and other property. Sounds a little like the Occupy Santa Cruz or the Peace Camp 2010, what the police have done here, and detaining and citing homeless people. The camp disbanded after city leaders, including Mayor Kevin Johnson, pledged to find a solution, including the possibility of establishing a legal safe ground campsite with basic services. In the years since, civil rights attorney Mark Maron, who owned the property that spawned the tent city, and other advocates for homeless rights have challenged Sacramento's anti-camping ordinance, arguing it is overly broad and violates the constitutional rights of men and women who are without permanent housing. The outcome of the case before the 3rd District Court of Appeal could set a precedent for others waging similar battles over the rights of homeless people to sleep outdoors without police interference, local advocates said. On Tuesday, more than 75 people marched from the Lowe's and Fish's Homeless Services Complex on Sacramento's North C Street to the court building on the Capitol Mall in support of the 23 plaintiffs. Homeless people carrying backpacks, as well as pastors and business people, took seats inside the elegant courtroom with its towering wooden pillars and velvet drapes and listened to brief arguments before Justices Harry E. Hall Jr., Vance W. Ray, and Lewis Morrow. The panel is expected to make a ruling within 60 days. Maron, representing the homeless, told the justices that Sacramento's ordinance is broader than any similar measure that has been addressed by U.S. courts. It applies to both public and private property, he noted, as the Santa Cruz ordinance does, and makes anyone who is living outdoors technically in violation of the law punishable by up to a year in the county jail. The Santa Cruz ordinance requires two instances of camping with the intention of remaining overnight within 24 hours to make it a misdemeanor, although recent activity in the last 4 years with the support of Mayor Don Lane, the great homeless advocate, has put people who get camping or sleeping tickets and then don't address them or don't trudge off to court to do community service or try to get them dismissed, has put them in a position where they can face years in jail for these tickets, as well as, of course, the ruination of their credit and revocation of their driver's licenses and things of that sort. Every homeless person, getting back to Sacramento, in Sacramento who is not accommodated in a shelter is necessarily at all times a criminal, Maron said, based on the language of the ordinance. That is true, he said, whether they are eating, walking, standing in a public or private place, and be it day or night. He suggested that the law is selectively enforced on homeless people in contrast to those who line up overnight for concert tickets or to buy the latest version of iPhones. And we've noticed that in Santa Cruz regularly when the Cinema 9 has a new Star Wars picture or a new Harry Potter movie or some other movie where people are kind of camped out and all around the block. They're violating several ordinances. One of them is the sleeping ban. Another is sitting next to a building. Ordinances that are not enforced against middle-class people, but that are enforced against poor and homeless people. So it's clearly discriminatory, and it's clearly intended to be used in a discriminatory fashion, because that's, in fact, how it is used. This, Marin wrote, is punishment for a status, the status of being homeless. Such punishment, he argued, violates the constitutional right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment. And this is what the courts found, the federal courts found down in Los Angeles, throwing out their sitting, lying, and sleeping ban down there and requiring the so-called Jones settlement that required the city to allow people to sleep at night on the sidewalk since there's no other place for them to go. Senior Deputy City Attorney Chance Trim countered that the Sacramento's ordinance is similar to the one in Santa Ana that makes camping on designated public property a crime. A Sacramento Superior Court judge cited that case in dismissing Marin's earlier challenge to the ordinance in 2010. That was the famous, not the Icorn decision, it was the... remember it soon. It was a decision actually that I was familiar with because I was actually hired to advocate for homeless people in what was called the Seven Cities lawsuit, where seven cities joined together, including Santa Ana, which originally a court threw out the camping ordinance because they regarded it as violation of the right to travel, violation of the cruel and unusual punishment, prohibition of the state and federal constitutions. And I think maybe a violation of the substantive due process amendment, which has something to do with things like the right to privacy, things like the right to equal treatment under the law. I've always been a little confused about the substantive due process stuff. But in any case, at the Supreme Court level, the California Supreme Court level, there was a bad decision for poor people which found that, well, the law itself is not unconstitutional because you can always use a necessity defense in court, the defense that says, I had to violate this law because I had no choice. And indeed, that's what a lot of locals in Santa Cruz charged with a sleeping ban have done, and it's a rather complicated defense to make. It involves six different things you have to prove to the court, but in order to stop the courts from being tied up with these defenses, the judges and the commissioner, Kim Basket case, or Kim Basket, as she calls herself, did begin accepting letters from the Homeless Lack of Services Center that their shelter was full. And more recently, because of a protest by the Peace Camp 2010 advocates, Ed Fry, Gary Johnson, Chris Doyen, many others, I was even part of that protest for the first five or six nights, the city created a law that said your ticket will not even be filed with the court if you're on a waiting list for one of these two private organizations, the Homeless Lack of Services Center's Paul Lee Loft or the River Street Mini Shelter, which, you know, sounds good, except that the head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, Monica Martinez, followed by Letitia Schwartz, and now I'm not sure what Janine Thomas, the new head, is doing. But they would not reliably give you any evidence that you were on the waiting list. They would not reliably give you letters that said that their shelter was full. And I think they're desperate to not give the impression that they're trying to enable the homeless, as the new right-wing mantra goes. In any case, that long aside, back to the Sacramento ordinance, and the story about the Sacramento lawsuit against the sleeping ban there, actually the camping ordinance. The city attorney defending the camping ordinance took issue with Marin's assertion that the city ordinance is overly broad. Sacramento enforces its ordinance only when people are using camping equipment in clear violation of the law, he said. On private land, Trim said, the city rousts campers in response to complaints from property owners. It is totally within our purview to make sure that property owners' rights are not infringed upon by someone trespassing and camping on their property, Trim said. Marin,
a longtime champion of homeless rights, allowed campers to set up tents 5 years ago specifically to draw attention to the quest for a legal safe ground for those without shelter. Police said they were responding to neighborhood complaints when they cited 32 campers and seized their tents, sleeping bags, and other belongings. Many of the campers returned twice and a third time, abandoning the site only after the city made the promise to work toward a permanent solution and also threatened to arrest all of them. 5 years later, little has changed, said Joan Burke, director of advocacy at Loaves and Fishes. Homeless people are still sleeping on park benches and church steps and in parks and alleys, and they are still getting arrested. Despite political support among several city leaders, she said, no agreement has been reached on where a safe ground offering simple cabins and basic services might be located. We are finally here, and we hope the Court of Appeal will overturn this draconian ordinance, Burke said, standing on the courthouse steps before the hearing. It's interesting. You don't find the head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center doing the same thing, or Don Lane, or Micah Posner, or any other big, you know, sympathizers with the homeless, verbal sympathizers with the homeless, actually advocating for and standing up for homeless people in these kinds of protests and public statements. It shows you where the depth of the Santa Cruz hypocrisy that we have here. Sacramento, a more progressive community than Santa Cruz, is kind of hard to believe. It has to be said, Sacramento is much larger than Santa Cruz, and so you do get a bigger pool of people from whom you'll find some individuals who have more guts, courage, and conscience than others. You're more likely to find a few anyway in there. But the fact that the organization Loaves and Fishes, which is, you know, it's a pretty big nonprofit, will stick its ass out, so to speak, and I guess in large cities, you know, will put their ass on the line. So organizations do that. In Berkeley, in San Francisco, probably in Oakland, although I'm not as that familiar with the Oakland organizations, in Los Angeles, and used to be in San Jose, though I haven't seen too much of that happening in San Jose. So nonprofits can do it if they don't spend all their time worrying about whether they're going to get more money from the Merchant Association downtown. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hey, Robert. DJ Metter Embryo here.
Hey.
One thing that comes up from some of the legal, they're not literal citations you're making, but some of the discussion you're making of the, you know, the homeless discrimination that is done basically through the guise of the legal system, that almost seems in itself like a, what is it? It's working in contradiction to law itself, because the beginnings of Western law went back to limiting the power of the king. So it's just really natural to think of law as, you know, intrinsically siding on the side of the non-property owner to make their rights more extensive and limiting the rights of property owners because they already have a lot of power. And the whole reason Western law was even started was to limit the power of those who have excessive power.
Let me comment on that, DJ Amrio.
You know what I mean?
Let me comment on that because I think...
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I mean, I wish you were right, but in fact, law is almost entirely the province of the propertied people. Usually it has to do with disputes between the propertied people. So, for example, the Magna Carta, you know, I mean, that didn't come from non-propertied people mostly. It came from, barons, who sure as hell didn't like the kings, you know, overtaxing them. Although I think there was some discussion of the commons, and that involved the common people. But generally, unless you have revolutions, you don't have laws, and revolutions don't have a lot of respect for laws. I mean, they create new laws, but they're not really about the law. You know, they're about something that happens when the laws become so oppressive that people just can't take it anymore. People get a vision of something different and decide to do it and get together and do it. But,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's my response to that thought. But go ahead.
Well, Well, no. It's already made, and I'll let you go on with the show. I totally hear. I guess the only thing I would say, because what you said is very right, I guess the way I look at law and the way maybe an alternative view of law that myself and other people have is that it really should work basically 180 from how we have law functioning, perhaps like, you know, the law in quotation marks, because maybe it would have a different veneer, but the rules that you would have in a revolutionary society, that we really need that. And I see law as very easily being able to function if they would only ask me and let me and another, you know, committee of thoughtful people make the decisions. It would be oh so easy to make law an absolute hammer to make things much more equal. That's easy to see, because you see, even with the laws that we have to limit Wall Street, they've just abrogated the laws and just done naked corruption. I would argue that that isn't necessarily an indictment of law in it, in of itself. It's actually their being lawless.
Well,
so if
problem.
We actually had law and law enforcement, yeah. We wouldn't have all the Wall Street BS.
Yeah, I think the problem is that
well, I know that
the problem is that laws are actually. Sorry, go ahead.
I want you to respond.
Okay. You know, I mean, laws are enforced by a privileged class of people, courts and lawyers, who, you know, they don't share the experience of poor people generally. I mean, some do, but most don't. And, you know, you get this sort of natural gravitation of power to those who have it. They get more of it. What we're talking about power means the ability to force people to, you know, pay for the most elementary services, or, you know, we'll be paying for the air next, we'll be paying for the water, you know, paying for the electricity, paying for all these things.
I
think what you're saying is, maybe I'd agree with you, in theory, it could be a tool. I won't dispute that,
yeah.
and I don't want to really discuss it at length because I'm trying to roll through a lot of,
sure.
of sort of homeless stuff, but what's happening in your neck? Are you still in Fresno yourself?
Yes, I am. Yeah, uh-huh. Yes, I am in Fresno.
You know, I know that Michael Rhodes, the Fresno activist, is writing a book about the whole history of Fresno, which is very interesting. And
wow.
There, of course, they won another lawsuit there against the city for violating the prior lawsuit, the Kincaid lawsuit, that required them to hold property for 90 days before destroying it.
Okay.
And they're not doing
yep.
that, you know, and they've destroyed all the large encampments there, and they're babbling
yep.
about housing first, but they're not providing any kind of meaningful housing for the great majority of homeless people there. And that's yeah, that's what I know about Fresno.
It's very true. I mean, I can't add a lot to that other than, you know, personal experiences with a lot of the homeless folks who live around my neighborhood and seeing, you know, my neighbor who has a house having a, you know, very borderline and violent confrontation that you could hear all through the neighborhood, yelling at them to get a job, and them, you know, just so there's definitely some class enmity between people around here, and at the same time there's a huge amount of neglect, and there's street kids, a little bit like Detroit. Nothing necessarily new that I haven't, you know, reported but before. There's so many just vacant and unused buildings here that you kind of don't see them after a while. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't. It's almost as if you don't see them. It's really no. To have one homeless person in a town with so many unused buildings is definitely a travesty and just such an unnecessary one. And there wouldn't even be any harm to just let people go in and trash. Not that I'm saying that would be a good thing, but even with no supervision, and if the properties were trashed, they're being trashed by time anyway because they're just sitting there.
Is there much? Is there much squatting going on in Fresno that you know of?
That's a good question. Yes, and you know, probably it's in some places in downtown, and there's just. Detroit is way bigger, but it's like that in the sense of it's spread out, and there's these wide, these large areas that have just been kind of left to urban decay, or at least halfway have been. So yeah, there's a lot of room for that, but you know, the police come in and will put people in jail, and you know, I mean, it's not that different than any other place on those levels. Usually I just see the police stopping to basically harass the group of homeless and other, you know, mostly street kids that are out there on the street behind my house. So it's never like that I've seen the police, you know, come and actually help anybody. But at the same time, you know, it's not different. I've had some positive interactions with police here, so it's not like it's everything is, you know, that's always mixed, but that doesn't change the overall situation of it. And hey, I want to let you get on with your show. I didn't mean to hijack your stream here. I just wanted to comment a little bit and have an interchange with you. Thanks so much, Robert.
Thank you, Matthew. Bye-bye.
All right, have a great show.
And lines are open, 427-3772. I was reading a story from Sacramento about a hearing that happened, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, where an appeals court is considering Mark Maron, the attorney's challenge of the Sacramento sleeping ban. Continuing with that story, few communities around the country have solved the dilemma of homelessness. Not a dilemma. It is an enforced condition that has to do with income inequality and sending all the money to wars and corporations and essentially the wealthier side of things, developers, and letting this kind of this profiteering pyramid schemes continue while people suffer, and under the illusion that these are somehow they're disabled, they're medically different, they're bums, they're junkies, and in fact they're just human beings who are displaced urban residents. Really, often, although they're sometimes displaced rural residents, but I would say more often displaced urban residents. Last month, San Jose City Crews began dismantling one of the largest homeless encampments in the Bay Area, and I heard about, got a most recent report from that from Robert Aguirre, who's an activist there. He should have a report for us soon on what's going on in San Jose. They've moved several times. They're still not adopting the Portland approach of just having an open shopping cart parade, as they call it, where they simply set up in a park, and when they're driven away, they go to another park, and they're driven away, they go to another park, as a way of essentially letting the community know, authorities mostly know, that they're not going to stop, that they're not going to be dispersed and treated like rats, to be disposed of, to be treated as pests, to be eliminated, to be driven out of sight. Los Angeles officials have been debating the city's ban on people living in vehicles. Actually, the city, there was a decision that overturned a law, the Desert Rain decision, about banning habitating a vehicle. Santa Cruz has similar laws about sleeping in vehicles at night, which is probably too specific to be dismissed on criteria of vagueness, but on the other criteria, in terms of violation of cruel and unusual punishment and equal treatment under the law, possibly. Although, you know, the authorities can always say, see, we'll arrest anybody who's sleeping in their vehicle, except maybe those truckers who are going through, that sort of thing. Don't know. And that's the story from the history of this whole thing is in August and September of 2009 in Sacramento, homeless people set up camp and they were arrested. They were arrested and their possessions seized. In February the next year, a Sacramento Superior Court judge dismissed the case challenging the ordinance, and the civil advocates filed a civil rights lawsuit. And then January 20th, the Third District Court, that was 2 days ago, heard arguments, and a ruling is expected within 60 days. So that's what's cooking in Sacramento. There was some not entirely shocking news, but still shocking news from Democracy Now! This morning, if you heard it. That was the news of the shooting in New Jersey of a black motorist, or he was a traveler in a car with a guy. And on video, they finally released the tape that showed he was shot as he raised his hands and got out of the car by, I think it was a black New Jersey police officer. So it was black on black, but it was cop on community person, cop on citizen, you know, cop on human being who is under the, you know, the jurisdiction or under the, you know, a victim of this kind of stuff. And there, I'm going to play the audio for this, and then I'm going to read the transcript of what finally was released, not because the police wanted to release it, but because they were forced to do so by a Public Records Act request, which I found can yield some interesting results. Let's see if we can put this up and hear it. Let's see here. And we'll see what comes up. And here we go. I'm clicking on it. We'll see if it actually begins. This is from Bridgeton, New Jersey. And the story reads, with the dashboard camera and their cruiser rolling, police pulled a Jaguar over for running a stop sign on a dark night. But things suddenly turned tense, and one of the officers warned his partner he could see a gun in the glove compartment. Screaming over and over, "Don't you fucking move and show me your hands," at the man in the passenger seat, the officer reached into the car and appeared to remove a silver handgun. Then the passenger, despite being warned repeatedly not to move, stepped out of the Jaguar, his hands raised about shoulder level. The officers opened fire, killing him. That was Jeremy Reed in Bridgeton, New Jersey. However, if you listen to the dialogue, you also hear them directing him to get out of the car. So the story is not entirely accurate. It includes, or at least another story included, the transcript of this video. But I don't know if we can... Here we go. Let's see if we can get it here. We'll have a little advertisement first.
Everyone has an off day.
I'm going to cut on the advertisement until we actually get to the video. We have to get past the advertisement. Oh, no. Here we go.
Police have released shocking new video of a deadly confrontation that happened in New Jersey back in December.
That's right. Two officers shoot and kill a man during a traffic stop, and the whole thing was caught on camera. Now, we have to warn you, the video you're about to see is graphic.
Where that? Right on South Pine Street. Wow. Hey, you got a driver's license?
Yeah, I got my driver's license.
What's up, man? Can you go and grab it for me?
We stop.
No. Show me your hands. Show me your f***ing hands. Show me your hands. Don't f***ing move. Don't you f***ing move. Don't you f***ing move. Get him out the car, Raj. We got a gun in this glove compartment. Don't you f***ing move. Don't you f***ing move. Show me your f***ing hands. Show me your hands. Don't you f***ing move. Don't you f***ing move. I'm telling you, I'm going to shoot you. You're going to be f***ing dead. I'm telling you. You reach for something, you're going to be f***ing dead. I'm telling you.
Tonight,
I'm telling you. Keep your hands right there. You, hey, Jerome, you reach for something, you're going to be f***ing dead. He's reaching. Show me your f***ing hands.
Go.
No, you're not. No, you're not. Don't move. Don't you
f***ing. He gets out of the car, holds up his hands, and gets shot. The other guy is holding up his hands as well.
We're joined now by 48 Hours Crime Center reporter Michelle Sagona. Michelle, what led up to this confrontation?
You know, there was a traffic stop from what we've learned. This video was released simply because of an open public records request. The police department did not want to release it out of respect for the man who was shot and killed. But they made it very clear that they were going to release.
We have to call that a likely media lie. I don't know. Out of respect for the man who shot and killed, probably his relatives, the man who shot and killed, wanted to see that released very, very strongly. But again, we'd have to listen to the press interviews of the protests. Apparently, a lot of protests have been happening, or a number of them have been happening in this small Bridgetown city or town, and that's in New Jersey. But the media hasn't been covering it.
They sit in its entirety, so you could hear the voices and hear what's happening. After the traffic stop happens, you can see one of the officers going to the passenger side of the car, approaching both of the men inside of the car. Now, the driver has both of his hands out of the window, and what it appears is that the passenger didn't have anything in his hands, but there may have been a gun inside of the glove box. And when he goes to get out of the car, when he's not supposed to, that's possibly when that officer felt threatened, and maybe he had a weapon on him. You know, we just don't know at this point. The investigation is continuing.
Michelle, can we talk a little bit about the history, particularly the criminal history of the man that was killed?
Absolutely. Well, you know, in this particular video...
Victim was shot 8 times, according to
many media reports. He's identified as a Jermaine Reed. This is, you know, again, from many reports out there as of right now. And he was convicted and served time for shooting at New Jersey State Police when he was a teenager, and served a lot of time in prison, and then was arrested last summer for a number of charges. Now, one of those officers was involved in that arrest last summer. So he knew this suspect. He has had, you know, contact with him in the past, knew of his history, and, you know, may have felt threatened. Again, we don't know yet, because that part of the investigation is still coming out. But now we do have videotape to go with every single movement that happened from the moment that that car was spotted, allegedly running through a stop sign, all the way up until the shooting happened.
And Michelle, just again, break it down for us. Why exactly did the police feel it was necessary to release this video?
You know, they didn't. And they were complying, again, with an open public records request from a local media entity. And they have, you know, they wanted to, you know, comply with that request. And that's why they did what they did. They were against it. They made it very clear on their Facebook page this is not something that they wanted to do. Again, out of respect for Mr. Reed, who was shot. But, you know, again, they were just doing what they had been requested of at this point.
All right, Michelle Cigonia, thank you so much for that insight. It certainly is really, really hard to watch.
Yeah, very disturbing
video indeed.
We're going to take you now to... Okay, I'm being told that we're not going to take you now. We're going to tease you for updates on this investigation and to find more crime stories, head to cbsnews.com/crimesider.
And this is the usual approach police and media, compliant media, use when these kinds of things happen. They go into the criminal record of the person who was
Britain's
shot
Prince
dead.
Andrew denied allegations
Hang
today
on a
that
second,
he had sex with
this.
An underage American woman. These.
There's also a picture of a neighbor who spoke at a press conference, an African-American woman, and I don't have her statement. We don't have the statements of those who are not simply flacks and fluffers for the police department. Here's the transcript of what happened in another story, another media story of the same incident in Bridgeport. This is in... both these officers have been placed on leave. The guy's name again is Jeremy Reed. This is a minority city of 25,000 people south of Philadelphia. I'll read a little bit about this for you. The two-minute deadly standoff came after the killing of black men in New York. Yes, in Ferguson, we're aware of that. And by the way, in Ferguson, you may have heard already another story released by Democracy Now. It's not been confirmed, but, quote, sources inside the Attorney General's office, the federal Attorney General's office, state that Wilson, the officer who shot Michael Brown dead, is not going to be charged with anything. So this kind of outrageous response to and has to be viewed as likely cover-up of a police murder is hopefully going to provoke a lot of outrage and continuing outrage and determination to make changes. Indeed, as I've mentioned before, there is a protest coming up in Santa Cruz, Cage's Kill, having to do with the deaths in our own jail in the last 2 years after the jails have become privatized. There's a screening of the film Selma at 4 o'clock on Saturday. The Cage's Kill protest is at noon at the town clock on Saturday. The Selma filming at the Del Mar is at 4 for Project Pollinate. There'll be a Cafe Huff there. And I really encourage people to really focus as well on what our Santa Cruz Police Department is and is not doing, is and is not releasing. We did get the figures around Officer Azua in terms of finally getting for the first time the actual race stats of a police officer's cite and arrest record. And the people who I hope to get this the figures crunched by, so we can get a clearer sense of whether Officer Azua tends to give more citations to African Americans than their occurrence in the population. And certainly, apparently, they're in the jail about, what, 5 to 7 times as frequently as they're in the population here. But the question is whether the citations are being issued by our police department. There's another agency that is, at least some individuals in it, can be, well, there have been accusations of racial profiling going on. We need to find out what's going on there. And so we need to really focus on what's happening locally, as well as to express our outrage and solidarity with those who are being killed. Black lives matter, homeless lives matter, minority lives matter, women's lives matter, everybody's lives matter. And this notion that police officers need some incredibly special protection and privileges and benefit of the doubt is preposterous. Those in power need just the opposite. They need to be challenged. They need to be overseen. They need to be hedged in with real restraints, because power is an intoxicant, and power corrupts, generally speaking. At least power over other people corrupts. And unchecked power corrupts even more. The video show it speaks for itself. This story continues from the AP, that at no point was Jeremy Reed a threat, and he possessed no weapon on his person, Walter Hudson, chairman and founder of the civil rights group the National Awareness Alliance, said Wednesday. He complied with the officer, and the officer shot him. And that's what the video, it's not the best video, it's dark, it's at night, the car is, it's from the back of the car looking in. You can find it online. And again, the guy's name is Jeremy Reed, the man who was killed, Jeremy Reed, Reed, Bridgeton, New Jersey, is the city where it was happening. And a Philadelphia lawyer, Conrad Benedetto, said he'd been hired by Reed's wife, LaWanda, to investigate. He said in a statement, the footage raises serious questions as to the legality and or reasonableness of the officer's actions that night, because Reed was shot as he raised his hands. And that's pretty clear from the video. Actually shot just after he raised his hands, it looked like to me, or certainly right in that interval. Reed, 36, spent about 13 years in prison for shooting at 3 state troopers when he was a teenager. And Days, that's the officer who shot him, knew who he was. Days was among the arresting officers last year when Reed was charged with several crimes, including drug possession and obstruction. Again, notice the crimes. Drug possession and obstruction. Drug possession isn't a crime, really. It's a pretext being used to incarcerate African Americans. And obstruction is a code phrase for when you can't find something to charge folks with, you charge them with obstructing an officer. In Bridgeton, where 2/3 of the residents are black or Hispanic, the killing has stirred small protests over the past couple of weeks, including a demonstration on Wednesday, a day after the video was made public at the request of 2 newspapers under the state's open records law. Taisha Miller, and that was the woman I was speaking of, she was a neighbor of Jeremy Reed, spoke at a news conference Wednesday. And I may be able to find her. I think I'm going to, however, leave this, maybe come back to it on Sunday so I can get through a few other things. And as before I do that, I'm going to take a brief musical break in case people want to call in. The phone number is 427-3772.
I met a stranger. Oh, she told me. About people in a foreign land. She pointed her finger. She said to me, there's people. Oh, there's people hungry over there. Some people laughed. Oh, when they saw her face. But I cried. Oh, I cried. crying when I saw her smile. She got a toothbrush in her back pocket.
We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. Uncle Dennis, whose show From the Cream to the Dregs follows mine, has just called in distraught, apparently in a struggle with his computer, and he's going to be late coming into the studio. Dennis always prepares for a show extensively, apparently. He's a model for us all. And he's asked me to put on an older show, but don't be discouraged. This isn't just going to be the same old reruns that I have to put on because no new shows are archived, or few are. But he will be in to do his regular show just a bit late. Let's hear some voices from the street, which I haven't been playing enough of in the last few shows. I will be getting into a couple things. I put in a letter to Don Lane regarding audio devices. That's the ongoing dispute that I, as a radio broadcaster who usually records at least parts of the Santa Cruz City Council meetings, I'm having with the mayor, who has been a part of the former mayor had me arrested and regularly had the police seize my recording device when I attempted to record from the area near the speaker's podium. And we all did that on the 13th of January.
because their sound system went out. We didn't ask for permission. We just did it. And they said absolutely nothing, as they shouldn't have. I mean, it's ridiculous. We have a right to do it. And I'm going to give you some more discussion of that issue as it's developing, insofar as it's developing. Also, we'll talk about the Santa Cruz City Council agenda, which isn't very exciting. The only thing that is really coming up is the fact that people are going to show up and demand that the City Council rescind the Bearcat and send it back to whence it came. You know, what's the point of throwing more money at these military corporations so they can distribute more military equipment throughout the United States and make more profits and, you know, increase the likelihood of the kind of stuff that happened in Bridgeton, New Jersey, with the murder of Jerome Reed by armed and uniformed officers, equipped and trained by their department. And there's going to be some other stuff, too. But let's hear some voices from the street and perhaps, who knows, maybe a voice or two from you out there. Call-in number is 427-3772. Thanks to the callers for calling in. And here's some more voices and sounds from the streets. This is from the 14th of January. I'm a bit behind, almost a week behind now, but I'm going to try to catch up.
We're out here. Hey, Patrick.
So we're out here. It's about, I don't know, 20 after 6, in front of the Del Mar on January 15th, listening to a performer here with a closed guitar case in front of Santa Cruz Gifts and Jewelry. A pretty nice sound here.
All the places I could go, places that I've been. If you weren't there with me, they don't mean a thing. Honey, pick up boot heels. Pick up boot heels.
And it's unclear whether she doesn't have an open guitar case, so. But she does have a backpack and a closed guitar case on the sidewalk.
She's playing next to a building, which is illegal. Almost everywhere up and down the avenue.
All right. What's your name, singer?
My name is Margo Silker.
Hey, Margo. We'll play you on free radio.
Really?
Yeah.
K-Pig?
I wish it were. We're pirate radio.
Awesome. That's so cool. I've been looking to do a radio show. If I send you an email with my information,
Yeah, sure. We're definitely looking for people to do radio shows.
Awesome.
Remember, we're talking small radio.
Yeah, well, it sounds great.
You got a DVD or a CD?
I have a card I can give you.
Okay.
Number two.
Almost as good.
No hassles from police?
Actually, I'm not allowed to take money.
Well, I'm going to give it to you anyway, so it's tough.
I don't want you to get in trouble, but thank you.
No, not at all. It's actually legal to you to take money, you just can't put out a display device.
Right.
So as long as you take it, you can take it.
Well, thank you very much.
Again, we've been listening to... Sure, it's on my card, Robert Norris. And you are?
I'm Margo Silker.
Hey, Margo. Play on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take an interview. We're talking with
Forrest Rogers.
And Forrest, you're leaning against your stick. You got a backpack. You got a big smile on your face. And you're saying police are a thing like stormy weather?
Yeah. You can't really... It's just a thing in life.
A condition that happens?
Yeah. You can't help it. What you can help is whether or not you get wet. So it's like... You said, like, police happen to you like this, and external force, like, you have no control over, you have to be sad about that. It's like, well...
I'm more mad than sad myself, but I hear you. You can be sad, too. Or you can just, you know, you can blow it off. It's okay, too. Where are you from?
From South Carolina.
Long time in Santa Cruz or just made it into town?
Made it Thanksgiving.
Oh. And how's, you been indoors or outdoors?
Out. I'm an outside dog. It says on the camping ticket, the illegal camping ticket, homeless. It's official.
How many tickets?
Just two right now. Just two.
And were they in different places or?
Let's see. Yeah. Yeah. The one, yeah. I got one down here at the beach, Cowell Beach. Yeah. They don't like it if you camp there.
But you've been sleeping out every night.
Yeah, well, you have to sleep somewhere.
Not if you're homeless. Get out of town.
Well, that's what I see, that that's like a pattern across the country. I come, like, in South Carolina, where I'm from, they're doing it. It's like this whole, like, sweep the homeless under a rug kind of thing, and it goes away. Well, I don't know. It doesn't work. It's like the difference between hiding the dirty is not exactly clean. You know what I mean?
And the homeless are not exactly pure.
Well, you see what I mean here.
I do.
You see what I mean? By dirty, I'm saying the problem of homelessness.
What they regard as dirty.
Well, not even the dirt simply is a symbol for something we
want to hide.
That we don't want. Like, nope, we don't. You don't want to look around the streets and see the, like, a person in pain. You don't want. We don't like, as human beings, we don't like that. It makes us feel bad.
Particularly poor people. If we got businesses and we don't want them hanging out in front of our businesses. You know what I mean? It's the American way. So.
Well, it's a shame that the American way is backwards, because you are rewarded for screwing your fellow man instead of saying, like, come in, like, you're cold, like, let me make you warm. I have enough to, I have what it takes. I've got abundant warmth. If you're cold, here, it's for you. Like, rather than that, I don't know.
A lot of people have that impulse, I think.
Well, it's that impulse is rewarded by what we call success in this society.
Often it's punished if you do it to the wrong people. Or perhaps you do it to the right people, but the high people don't like it, you doing it to the low people.
I don't know.
That's my experience. I don't know, that's my theory anyway. But, you know, you have your own thoughts, and we've been talking with... What's your name?
Forrest Rogers.
Thank you, Forrest. Should be on... free radio on Thursday night, which would be then. We're talking with O'Neill Wood. And O'Neill, you just sort of, you know, waved hello to me, came on over, shook my hand, and reminded me that you at last, what, you saw me on TV 13 years ago?
Yes, sir.
Did we talk, or did we just happen to see me on TV?
I just listened to the show.
What did you come away with?
I came away with the message that that law enforcement became really conservative, considering a very liberal county, and they started mistreating the homeless down here. And actually, sometimes what they'd do is they'd take your ID, so they don't have to do the paperwork, just drop you off at jail and keep your ID so they can do the paperwork later. And then when you get out, you don't have your ID, and then they write you for a ticket for not having your ID.
Well, you can't get a ticket for not having your ID, but it, you know, it can still be very difficult if you don't have your ID.
This is true.
And it's a way of punishing people, too, you know, because then they have to go get another fucking ID.
I agree.
So you've been out of town, you got married, you came back. Are you now living in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, I'm in Royal Oaks now.
And you renting, you got your own house, you got a millionaire now, are you?
No, sir.
Yeah.
No, I rent.
Yeah. You're working regularly, you got a job, or you're living off of a secret drug money? I don't want to probe too closely here. Anyway, how has Santa Cruz looked to you? Any different than 13 years?
I love Santa Cruz, man. This is a beautiful place. My mom lives here. She just had a hip replacement. She's in hospice right now. She's doing great.
Is that one of the reasons you're here, to take care of your mom or see her?
Yeah, be with my mom.
You were originally from Santa Cruz?
Yeah, 38th and East Cliff.
And you left, why?
I met the girl of my dreams, so I thought, but...
That worked for a while, but not after a while.
Oh, five-year marriage and marriage counseling, and it just...
You had some...
Part ways.
Right. And now you're back.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Yeah, we've been talking with...
O'Neill Wood.
Thanks, O'Neill.
Thank you.
This should be on free radio So sometimes a kind of strange coincidences happen, makes one feel one's in a kind of a positive twilight zone area. So, for instance, the South Carolina guy I talked with before this last interview said that he ran into the singer on the East Coast, and then suddenly now he ran into her again. I suppose that's, you know, so what? But it gives you kind of a positive chill, at least it does to me. Anyway, we're at Pacific Avenue at night. It's about 22:07, and I'm here, and you're there. We have another person with a guitar here on the corner. Hey! Guitar and clickety-clacks.
Hello.
And we have these two fine musicians, Mr.
Meow
and
Matt.
So it's M&M here.
M&M.
On the corner, outside of the... Well, no, they are kind of near the blue zone. This looks like a very small blue zone.
Oh, no, it extends out here.
I mean, oh, really? Okay, you are in the blue zone. It's an unusual blue zone.
Following the ordinances.
Yeah. This is a blue zone right outside of Ohm Gallery, I guess, and it's on the side street, and it's a sort of unusual. This would be an illegal place